The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, I would like to talk about an important phenomena that can go under the name of emergence, what emerges, the process of emerging. And to introduce this topic, I'd like to say that in much of our modern world, maybe especially modern Western world, that many people find themselves stressed. Many people have a lot of doings that they do, and they have busy schedules, and trying to fit it all in can be stressful. And it's not just doing a lot of things, but it's also attaining a lot of things, accomplishing things, attaining certain identities, certain status, certain stages of success, all kinds of things that keep people busy and going and doing. And because of all this doing that people do, some people find it very helpful to have a practice, for example, like meditation, that they understand that what they're doing is just being. So the contrast between doing and being, and probably many of you have heard this before, and that it can be a relief to stop the doing and just to be. And it just kind of lets a lot of things just shed, drop away, de-stress, especially if the being practice can be done for some time. And so the layers of holding that we have, layers of preoccupation, have a chance to settle away, and come back to some people say, kind of a more natural state of just being. And it's quite wonderful for some people. One of the things that makes it wonderful is the settling of all the doings is to settle some of the mental preoccupations, some of the ways in which we mentally will be judging ourselves and others, sometimes incessantly, sometimes not even, clearly knowing how much we're kind of living with criticism and loathing and judgments. And as that kind of doing and that kind of thinking settles and gets quieter, in which we allow ourselves to be, it can feel like just being in this more so-called natural state can feel like we become whole again, or we become good again, or like we're free from all the weight that we've been carrying on top of us. And so there's this being, and so exactly what being means is, of course, an interesting word. But I think of being as being somewhat, the word to me seems to be kind of static. It's the activity of, if it's the ing of be, the doing of be, it's just like you're doing kind of just staying the same. This is how it is. And when my son was young, I jokingly with him, tried to prohibit him from growing anymore. I put my hand on top of his head and said, "You got to stop this now," this is big enough, and this is perfect, how you are, and let's like keep it here now. And he thought that was lots of fun. Because it wasn't going to stop, There was this—he wasn't just going to be six; he was going to become seven and eight, and just this process of becoming—it was just in process. And it's certainly one of the great wonders of the world to spend time with any forms of life that are growing from birth into adulthood and beyond. And to watch the tremendous biological drive to this process of evolving and becoming and developing that goes on, and to watch a little baby go from not crawling to crawling, and crawling to standing, and to standing to walking to running, and this drive to explore the world and find out what's out there and smell the flowers and go out and be on the edges, stop. we have two sons, and the first one, I kept worrying if he wasn't developing fast enough. I couldn't see how this was going to work. That I remember him laying on the changing table, and he was just flailing his arms and hands around like really floppy. Like, how is this person ever going to learn to hold anything? You know, this is not going to happen. And so I was kind of eager for the milestones to come, the walking. Oh yeah, he started walking. You know, that's like. But I knew better for the second one. And then I was in no hurry, because every milestone to the young is like adds other kinds of stresses for the parents. Okay, now we have to, you know, baby-proof the house. Now we have to do this and that. So, but anyway, this momentum of growth, and to watch it, you know, and to watch, you know, through teenage years and into adulthood, is, you know, it just doesn't stop, the momentum of it. Not only the physical growth, but also the psychological, emotional development that goes on. And it's kind of like watching a force of nature that evolves and develops. This morning, coincidentally, I saw a little National Geographic video that's titled Becoming. And it's, I don't know, maybe 5-6 minutes long. And it's, I think, a Swiss documentary person who spent some like 6 months capturing these 6 minutes of an alpine newt, kind of a salamander, going from a single cell to becoming a full-blown salamander. And apparently salamanders or newts have transparent eggs, so if you get it just right, you can kind of film it with some kind of, you know, microscope. And it was kind of amazing to watch this single cell morph and change and become bigger, and you know, at some point you see it just bigger and bigger, kind of like ball of something, and then beginning to fold back on itself and inside out, and then expand, and these little things like pop out a little bit and then get absorbed, and then eventually there's this newt that comes, and so this kind of like, you know, stop. You know, it's not going to stop. It's going to, unless it dies, it's going to keep going and going. And then it goes into old age. And every stage of life is its own process of evolving, of becoming. There's a natural process that goes on. This morning I was washing my hands, and I kind of was looking in the bathroom mirror, through the mirror into my hands. So sometimes if you see parts of your body through the mirror, they're kind of like not quite your own, at least for me. You know, like it's not quite. And I saw in my hands the kind of the old hands of my parents, my father. And I said, yeah, it's happening to me too. And, you know, this evolving and changing and movement that goes on. And rather than being distressed about this, it's also possible to just be amazed and awe of this process that unfolds, that we're part of, we're on a conveyor belt, that, you know, it's moving, whether we want it to move or not, and we're going along for the ride, and we'll change and morph in all these wonderful ways. And so this process in English Buddhism is often called becoming. And it comes from a Pali word, bhava, that occasionally has been translated as a being, and as occasionally as existence. But I think the more popular thing more recently is becoming, because it's more active sense. It's not something static, but something that's in process. The process of coming into be. And in Buddhism, where we see as everything as being impermanent, doesn't see that things are chaotic, but rather things evolve because of causes and conditions in particular patterns. And that, and that pattern of of coming into being is called becoming. And this word bhava that we translate as now as becoming comes also as related to the word bhavana and bhavati. Bhavana is the Buddhist word for what's often translated into English as practice. But practice doesn't really do justice to the origins or the meaning of the Pali Buddhist word. The word means more closely, like, well, what's interesting is the first entry in the Pali English Dictionary for bhavati and bhavana is the English, a little bit archaic maybe, English expression to beget. And, you know, to beget something often is used to give birth to children. Parents beget the children. And so this idea that something gets born, something creative and gestates and gets ready and then comes forth in this way. And so this bhavana is to practice, certainly, but it's more the process of cultivating something, giving birth to something, developing something that is being emphasized here. So if you say, you know, I practice, which we say in English, that begs the question, what do you practice? And I follow my breath, I do loving kindness, you know, I'm trying to practice something. But if you say, I'm cultivating, I'm begetting, you know, what are you cultivating? What are you developing? Then the chances are that you don't answer saying, I'm following my breath, I'm doing loving kindness, but I'm cultivating compassion, I'm cultivating freedom, I'm cultivating wisdom. And then we start talking about particular qualities that we're developing and evolving and begetting, rather than this kind of, you know, this a little bit removed thing of the practices we do. However, I don't like the word becoming too much. Maybe because it feels, my English, my mouth, it just seems a little awkward to keep using it. And in my more colloquial English, you know, becoming is associated with, you know, he's very becoming. You know, and so it's, it has associations which somehow don't quite work for me. But the word that I like is emergence. And so in Buddhism, everything is constantly in a process of emergence. Things are emerging. Things are being born constantly. Every moment is an emergence. Nothing ever emerges and then is. There's no is. They're just becoming. They're just emerging. Something new emerges. And as soon as it emerges, it itself is in a process of further emerging, further evolving, further developing. So the same thing is true for us. For physically, emotionally, psychologically, mentally, spiritually, that we have the opportunity, much of us is just continue to evolve and develop. One way or the other, it keeps emerging and developing. And we find in early Buddhism a tremendous amount of words that are used to kind of say the same thing. So there's the word, many words that can translate into English as arising, or manifesting, or appearing, that are used. Upwelling, for this idea that things are constantly coming and coming. The other side of that is a whole bunch of words for the ending of things, the ceasing of things, the disappearing of things. And these things to go hand in hand, right? Things that if one thing arises, one thing emerges, what was is no longer there. Some aspect of what was there. And if, you know, many of us, because we're thinking about things, we think that we have a concept. So Joe's sitting nice right in front of me, and I turn away my eyes, and Joe's still here. Joe hasn't changed. You know, there's no right, it's the same Joe. But actually, in the moments my eyes turn away and I go back, something has changed. Maybe he's embarrassed, or but I called him out. And so this, there's constantly emerging and new person, new something, and maybe subtle ways, but is our thinking fast enough or flexible enough to see the new thing that's happening? Or am I still with the Joe that was there a minute ago? Or can I watch and change? Or how about for yourself? Are you still with who you were a minute ago, a day ago, a year ago, 40 years ago? Or are you flexible enough to kind of see the change and the movement that's happening moment by moment, day by day? I meet plenty of people, and to some degrees in small ways, corners of my life, I've done this too, that who I was or what happened to me 40, 50 years ago, somehow I'm still trapped in that image, in that idea. I haven't really freed myself from some things. And so you know, this ability to kind of be current with oneself is quite something. Some of us, like I've had, a self-image of being younger than we are. I don't know how many of you have that. so we're quite, sometimes, I feel like I'm not quite current on myself because, I still have some idea. So this idea of emergence, and that things are constantly emerging, continual coming into being, our inner life, our physical life, even our world is in a constant process of change and evolving. And so meditation, the meditation practice. When people are trying to use meditation to make something happen, to be the doers, the agents of change, I'm going to meditate and get something to happen. That's often stressful to do that. If they look at meditation as something we're going to attain, I'm going to get that wonderful state or the wonderful status, that can be stressful. Not that it's unsuccessful to some degree, but it's often a difficult way to meditate. Another way of meditating is to allow and nourish the proper arising, to develop and cultivate something beautiful to arise. It's kind of like a farmer who knows when to nourish and feed and water the plants and when to leave them alone. So we have to water our inner life, we have to feed it, but we also have to know how to get out of the way. And meditation is one of those great places to get out of the way and allow something to emerge, the emergence of things. This was something I discovered early in my meditation practice. When I was still in college, I was meditating twice a day. I began meditating because I was suffering and I wanted to solve some of my problems I had, social problems, personal problems, and not suffer so much. And somehow I thought meditation would help. And it did, but very differently than what I thought I would unfold. What happened was instead of becoming a better, likable, wiser person, I settled into meditation and I found that I was no longer being swept along in the currents and rivers of my thinking. And I was no longer identified with my thinking so much. And my thinking mind quieted down. Not completely, but it was no longer the center of how I saw myself, how I thought about life, how I was experiencing life. And as that happened, those concerns I had began to dissolve. Some of the questions, some of the searching I was looking for, just kind of faded away without any planning to do so. I didn't even know that it was possible. And what happened instead was an upwelling of some kind of feeling or presence or way of being that was kind of an emergence, something that felt profoundly satisfying, profoundly at-homeness, somehow at home in this universe, or profound sense or experience of being alive in a completely adequate, peaceful, happy, contented way. And I got to see the difference between being swept up in these currents of thinking and preoccupations and letting those recede and even dissolve, fade away, and what it was like to be a person alive, breathing in these two different states. And that seeing that contrast is something that I continue to see right down to today. It still goes on. I feel very lucky that I have something like meditation, because still to this day, I'll go around some hours preoccupied about something, concerned about something, and I'm still, to this day, at times kind of tricked into believing or acting as if the solutions will come if I just think about it enough. that's where it all lives, the whole thing, and that's the way you negotiate and find your way and some thinking around. And it turns out that some of this kind of staying in the world, this currents of thinking, not only is not going to be the answer for certain things, but it actually makes it worse. It's kind of like staying stuck in the story, staying stuck in the assumptions, staying stuck in the kind of labyrinth of concerns where there's no way out of the labyrinth. And so it's like the Gordian knot that you can't untie. And then meditation is like having a sword. You cut the knot. You don't untie the knot. So you sit and meditate, and then I'll have all these thoughts will just recede. And I say, oh, I'm back. Oh, some of the concerns I had don't really deserve to be concerns. They're operating under certain assumptions, which aren't really not that good to operate under. And now that I've kind of reconnected to myself in some deeper way, I'm going to operate under from a different premise, a premise that I'm already content and satisfied. It's already alive in a peaceful way. And I don't need some of the things that I was operating under. I need that. That person has to do this for me or that for me, or, you know, all this kind of world of things. And to be able to come back over and over again to this place where I drop the kind of world of thinking, which is kind of a place they get stuck in, to the place of being unstuck, of what is emerging, the emergence, the arising of phenomena, the becoming of phenomena, that almost like for me, in my sense, maybe my metaphor, the upwelling from within. So when I first started meditating, the first year of really meditating every day, this was a big discovery for me, and it made a huge difference in my life, and it changed my life for the rest of my life. It kind of set the course for what direction I took my life into. But we are not we don't have to be this allowing, this emergence and allowing or letting be, is not meant to be a completely passive, non-participatory event, because things are constantly emerging and changing and becoming new, constantly. But they become new based on the conditions that precede it, the conditions in which they occur in. So if you plant a seed in an infertile, dry soil, nothing's going to germinate. Or if it germinates, it's going to wither quickly. But if you plant it in a soil that's fertile and soft and moist, it might thrive and become a nice big plant. So what are the conditions that nourish and support the seeds inside of us, the coming and movement? And we have a role in that, in establishing the conditions that are for our betterment. And this is represented by what some people would say is the first, the opening lines of the Buddhist Bible. You know, I say that just to kind of contrast it to the opening of the Old Testament or the Torah. All experience, that's like pretty much a lot, right? All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering follows, as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. So what we do with our mind has a lot to do with what our experience is. And here you have to be a little careful with the word experience. Experience is not what's out there, but how we experience what's out there. Our personal direct involvement, participation, experience of something. We're not innocent bystanders that just have reality happens to us, and we're just the victims of it. How we experience it, how we know it, how we perceive it, is we're actually much more actively involved than most people realize. And so Buddhism puts the mind kind of at the seat, important. Be careful with your mind, what your mind does. So speak or act with a corrupted mind, then suffering emerges. Those are the conditions for further suffering. Then the next verse goes, all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a never-departing shadow. So what kind of mind do you cultivate? What kind of mind do you meet? What is your relationship to what's happening here? What's going on? And so if we resist reality, if we contract around reality, if we meet the experience with greed or with hate, if we meet our experience with selfishness and self-absorption, those are particular conditions that means that this affects what's going to emerge, what's going to arise. And all the ones I mentioned will probably in some way or other create discomfort for the person who has it. That's what's going to arise. And all kinds of things might follow in the wake of that. But if we can experience reality without resistance, without contraction, without greed or hatred, without selfishness, that creates a very different set of conditions for how things will evolve. And certainly our inner life, how it will evolve. And so a big part of Buddhist practice is to get out of the way so we can allow this beautiful thing inside to evolve without the influence of clinging, aversion, selfishness, all these different things. In the Buddhist kind of psychology, if you have clinging, and that clinging joins together with the emergence of the next moment, then they say that's going to give birth to suffering. That's going to give birth, and if that clinging is clinging to self, and that clinging to self joins the emergence of what's happening in the moment, then it gives birth to holding on to identity, attachment to identity. If it joins desire for sensual pleasure, some people are very focused on sensual pleasures, and if that's the desire, then as things emerge, there's birth into a world that's where we're oriented towards pleasure and pain. If we can join the emergence of things, the constant flow, without clinging, then the emergence is not going to have these extra complications that's going to give birth to suffering, give birth to further identity, which can be fragile and challenging to have. So to get out of the way is not to make ourselves a victim of experience, but rather to get out of the way to allow this deeper upwelling to occur, which apparently is a very trustworthy thing to do. What's not trustworthy is to allow the emergence of experience, the constant becoming of life. It's not trustworthy if that's being influenced by greed and hatred and contraction and selfishness. That sets in motion all kinds of visible and invisible kind of movements towards things that you should be very careful with. But if we can get out of the way and stop having the selfishness, stop having the clingings, and just experience this upwelling and the movement and what's happening and unfolding, we have remarkable capacities inside for healing, for movement towards freedom, towards understanding, to wisdom, to goodness. It's amazing what's in there. It's almost like if we meet with contraction and hate and aversion and clinging, it's really kind of, we're operating kind of on the surface of our life. But if we can get out of the way, it allows for the depth of what's here to evolve. To watch this little video of the newt, the salamander cells, evolve. Wow, I was kind of like, wow, how could this be? How did this evolve? It just seemed like this was kind of awesome to watch. And, we are awesome. You know, we started off as single cells. If someone could, video, the family video, the 9 months you were, you're like, and they sped it up so it's 6 minutes. I mean, we would be in awe. Why does this natural process of amazing evolution that we are as beings, why do we think it stops? Why can't we trust it in a deep way? And that's what I've learned from doing this practice. I've learned to get out of the way, know how to get out of the way, and let the emergence of things come and evolve and come. The discovery of emergence. So we become friend of reality. not the enemy of reality. And reality becomes our friend, not our enemy. And so we discover something that I call the majesty of emergence. The majesty of this life that's unfolding and moving and coming. And then we discover the wonderful space in which things emerge. It isn't just that things emerge, but there's the awareness that's aware of that. That awareness is quite a miracle and quite an amazing thing. And to discover and feel or sense or intuit that non-resistance that can exist, that allows this emergence, the becoming, to just unfold and just be. It's one of the great pleasures of life, the sense of freedom or non-resistance and just as things happening. To get out of the way and not muck it up with being selfish and self-centered and all that. So you might say, well, yes, that's good, so I'll just allow things to be, and what's coming through me now is strong desire, strong aversion, and I'm supposed to let it be. In a sense, yes and no. The yes is, the no is that it will, those forces do interfere with the healing good forces that are deep inside. They muck it up. I mean, it's still a natural process, but it one that moves towards suffering. The yes part, yes to allow it, is to allow it in a particular way. That we're a friend of reality. So if there is clinging, if there is grief and pain, hatred, or whatever we experience, difficulties we have inside, we don't want to bring those, work through them, become them in such a way that they contribute to how the next moment is shaped. So if we identify them strongly and think out of them, we kind of set the ship in one direction. But if we can get out of the way and not be troubled by these forces inside of us, trust that something wants to be born here. What is it that wants to be born? To sit with grief, to sit with emotional pain and not see it as a mistake or a problem, not see it as something that needs to be get rid of, not see it as an enemy, but see it as, oh, here, in this, something wants to be born. Something wants to evolve. What is it? If you, as you know, I like to say, if you cut yourself and you keep the cut clean and don't interfere with it, what wants to happen? The amazing process of healing. The cut will heal. It's amazing that it does that. If you break your heart, you can, you know, put salt in the crack all you want, and it'll never heal. But there's a way of allowing and opening and making space for the grief, the broken heart. And see that as part of the overall emergence. Get out of the way. Let it, trust it. Let it be there. Learn what it's like to kind of open up and sit quietly. Sit quietly means don't, see if you cannot continue the spinning, the whirlpool of thinking and ideas and that kind of keep us stuck, keep contributing ways of being stuck with it all. But to sit quietly in the midst, to trust, and almost ask yourself the question, what wants to be born here? But don't answer it with your words. Let the answer be what wells up inside. What wants to come here? It's all kinds of possibilities. It may be very different than what you thought. Some of it might be your strength. Maybe there's phenomenal degree of strength and motivation, courage that's waiting to come through you for some things. Perhaps what it is a greater, deeper appreciation of our humanity, our collective humanity, what it's like to be human and the birth of compassion. What if your grief is a door to a great universal compassion. I've known people who have come back and said that. They hated their grief, their hurt when they had it. It was very difficult. But when it was over, they said, wow, I wouldn't trade that for anything. Now I know something about the wellsprings, the upwelling of compassion as well. So to sit here and allow the emergence, keep allowing things to emerge, to arise. And if we trust the emergence, there'll be no emergencies. Something is working through us. And the Buddha used a lot of different metaphors for this process of the natural unfolding. One of them that I like a lot is that he used water flowing down a mountain. You know, unless there's a barrier, water will flow. And to describe the inner life, it's a life that will flow. And actually, the way he talked about it, it flows all the way back to the ocean. And so we will flow back to the ocean if we don't block the water. There's a natural, almost like a natural process unfolding here. But we have a responsibility to that process. And that is to create the very best conditions for that to unfold. In my life, I've discovered that meditation is one of the best things that I can do for that. And it helps me get out of the way. It helps me quiet this thinking mind, which kind of mucks things up at times. And it makes lots of space and room. It allows me to feel fully and in a good way and really be with things. Things need time. For some of the stuff inside here to really emerge fully and properly, it needs time. And so to sit and be quiet and give time to the inner life, to have Sabbath days, to have days where we just kind of allow things to unfold, to resolve themselves, to settle out, and then discover what is it that wants to emerge? What is emerging? And then don't get stuck. Don't pick up what is emerging. Be ready for the next emerging, the next becoming. And what does it take for you to keep being ready, keep being open, keep allowing this now, fresh, alive, nothing sticky, not preoccupied by what just happened, but ready for what's going to happen next. So emergence, the process of emergence. Life is a continual process of emergence. Be good farmers. Care for your emergence.